Welcome to the Quanta Science Podcast. Each episode, we bring you stories about developments in science and mathematics. I'm Susan Vallett. Recent efforts to map every cell in the human body have researchers floored by unfathomable diversity. With many thousands of subtly different types of cells in the human brain alone. That's next.
It's season 3 of The Joy of Why, and I still have a lot of questions. Like, what is this thing we call time? Why does altruism exist? And where is Jan 11?
I'm here, astrophysicist and co-host, ready for anything.
That's right, I'm bringing in the A-team.
So brace yourselves.
Get ready to learn.
I'm Jan 11.
I'm Steve Strogatz.
And this is...
Quanta Magazine's podcast, The Joy of Why.
New episodes drop every other Thursday.
In the 16th century, Belgian cartographer Abraham Ortelius created the world's first modern atlas, a collection of maps that he called the Theater of the World. The maps, drawn by Ortelius and others, detailed what was, at the time, the best knowledge of the world's continents, cities, mountains, rivers, lakes, and oceans. The atlas helped usher in a new understanding of global geography. Similarly, the creation of cell atlases, maps of organs and bodies constructed cell by cell, is heralding a new era in our understanding of biology. Powerful sequencing and imaging technologies invented in the last decade are revealing with unprecedented detail the composition of human organs and tissues, as well as those of other animals like the mouse and fruit fly. With these new tools, researchers can fingerprint individual cells based on which genes they're expressing. That information has revealed subtle and unsuspected distinctions among cells and has begun to illuminate how the diversity of cell types can be essential to the healthy functioning of organs. Steve Quake is a bioengineer and biophysicist at Stanford University who helped develop the technologies that make cell atlases possible.
We're at this amazing point in time in science where we're now able to understand the composition of these cell types. It changed the way we understand how human biology works.
Two recent cell atlas efforts, part of the National Institutes of Health's $250 million brain cell census, illustrate the excitement bubbling up in the field. A coalition of laboratories published 9 studies in Nature in December that collectively form a detailed atlas of the mouse brain. It's the most comprehensive mammalian brain atlas to date. It describes more than 5,300 types of cells found throughout the organ. How these cells are distributed and are related to one another suggests many intriguing ideas about the evolution of the mammalian brain. Another landmark contribution to the Cell Atlas project happened last fall. A global network of collaborators pushed a suite of papers in science journals that documented the incredible cellular diversity and complexity of the human brain. It's not a complete atlas because the scientists profiled only samples of cells across the organ. It still offers the most detailed map of the human brain ever made. Because of that work, it's clear that the human brain contains at least 3,300 distinct types of neurons, each expressing a different set of genes, which hints that the cells could serve a range of slightly different functions. It turns out much of this diversity is in the less studied and more evolutionarily ancient regions of the brain. This human brain cell atlas is merely an early edition. As scientists continue the task of tallying and classifying every single cell in the brain, they'll likely identify thousands of additional cell types. Locating and describing the variety of cells is only the first step. Scientists then have to work out what functions the cells serve and how they fit together. For that reason, Quake and others are working to stitch together cell maps from across the human body into a full human cell atlas, a holistic reference map of a human being that could help to tease apart which specific cells in which tissues go wrong to cause various diseases. Researchers familiar with the state of the work say the first draft of that atlas is likely to be published within the next couple of years. Although it's still early days, scientists predict that these maps will answer fundamental questions about cells, how they function, and how they can change over an organism's lifespan. Michael Angelo is an associate professor of pathology at Stanford.
It's a very justified leap of faith, but in a way it's a little bit of a leap of faith, almost the same way that the Human Genome Project was, which was that like it was one of these where I think the argument is that the inherent value of knowing this information and sort of the potential benefits of it is kind of so self-evident for so many things that it could affect. Because I mean, right now, right, I imagine even if you talk to those people like in the Brain Atlas, you're like, okay, so tell me right now, specifically stuff that you found, how is this going to impact like study of like neurocognitive decline or ALS or something, right? They probably couldn't tell you, but it doesn't mean it won't. Anytime you start to put up really large scientific resource sort of atlasing efforts, the value is the resource for future researchers, really.
Until just a few years ago, based on what scientists saw under microscopes, most researchers believed that the approximately 36 trillion cells in an adult human body could be categorized into only a few hundred distinct types. There were three types of muscle cells, epithelial and fibroblast cells in the skin, various kinds of neurons in the nervous system, endothelial cells lining the blood vessels, and so on. But the successes of the Human Genome Project invited researchers to look at our cellular makeup more deeply, at a genetic level. The differences in cells don't come from differences in the genes themselves. Every cell in your body contains a copy of your distinctive DNA and the 20,000 genes for making proteins it encodes. Here's Quake again.
There's kind of this misnomer. People say the genome is the blueprint of the cell. It really isn't. That's the wrong way to think about it, because pretty much every cell in your body has the same genome, but the cells are very different from each other. I think the right analogy is the genome is a parts list, and you need some way to understand how the parts are used in different cell types, and there's no way to predict it. You can't predict which cell types come out of a given genome.
To distinguish a white blood cell from a muscle cell at the molecular level, scientists have to look at the cell's RNA, where RNA transcripts are copied from DNA sequences. These transcripts ferry the instructions for building proteins to the ribosome, the cell's protein construction center. So RNA transcripts contain information about which genes are active and expressed in a particular cell. Using a powerful set of single-cell genomics tools, scientists can read these expression patterns to fingerprint a cell. These tools have matured over the past few years so that scientists can now quickly and efficiently look at tens of thousands or even millions of cells in a single experiment. Here's Quake.
Once that was in place, then there's nothing stopping you from making an atlas. Because you can do hundreds, thousands of cells, tens of thousands, millions, it all just kind of cascaded and it really accelerated.
Cell atlases started pouring in. Scientists began by examining the gene expression in individual cells from model organisms like fruit flies and mice. Since then, they've moved on to humans. Within the last year or so, maps of blood vessels, tumors, placenta, kidney and intestine, and other tissues were published in high-profile journals. Many of these atlases not only looked at cell identities, but also mapped out precisely where those cells were located in the tissues. This is information critical for understanding which cells might be involved with disease. Elizabeth Ray is a research assistant professor at the University of Washington who isn't involved in any cell atlas effort. She says the amount of data collection is mind-blowing, and she points out how rapidly the technologies have advanced. 12 years ago, as a graduate student at Vanderbilt University, Ray would examine the expression of a single gene in the developing mouse brain and liver. She says now we're able to do that, but for every gene expressed in every cell within a chunk of tissue. With each new cell atlas, researchers have had to reckon with how much complexity they were missing before. Reviewing the data sometimes made Stanford's Michael Angelo feel as if he were looking at endlessly looping videos of fractals.
I actually think a lot of this is kind of daunting. I don't know when it'll ever be done, to be honest. There's this math guy I follow on Twitter. He always posts these videos where you keep zooming in. That's kind of like this. You keep looking closer, then it's like more complexity.
This has proved true for many human organs, especially the brain. The complexity of the human brain in its construction and function has limited our ability to understand it. Its 86 billion neurons are tiny sparks animating thoughts, perceptions, feelings, and important functions throughout the body. Fabian Theis is the director of the Computational Health Center at Helmholtz Munich, who works on several Atlas efforts, but wasn't involved in the Brain Atlas. He remembers a colleague telling him that the brain is like a separate organism that's like 100 organs meshed into one. Claudia Doiga is an assistant professor of pathology and cell biology at Columbia University.
The brain is just so complex, you really need to put a lot of people together to dig through the big mess.
Doiga studies the hypothalamus, an ancient and critical part of the brain that evolved to control basic bodily functions like body temperature, heart rate, and hunger. In 2020, she was invited to help interpret Brain Atlas data collected from hypothalamic tissues. It was a rare opportunity to probe the infrequently sampled brain region. Hannah Glover is a postdoctoral researcher in Doiga's lab.
So we were sort of given the gargantuan task of trying to make sense of what is, you know, when we first looked at it was a mess of data, but sort of the more we combed through, the more we're able to sort of put the pieces together.
Glover spent months tearing through literature and reference atlases to identify genes expressed in different regions of the brain and comparing them to the genes found in the newly analyzed hypothalamus. Doiga says the analysis revealed an extreme amount of diversity. They identified more than 350 distinct neuron populations and 19 non-neuron cell populations from 10 different regions within the hypothalamus. Other research groups working on the brain cell census backed this up. Rebecca Hodge, an assistant investigator at the Allen Institute for Brain Science in Seattle, co-authored several of the new science papers.
The bulk of the cell type diversity in the brain is really located in these sort of subcortical areas that are involved in innate behaviors, regulation of breathing, regulation of attention, kind of all of those more evolutionarily ancient kind of functions that all animals have contain a huge diversity of different kinds of cells. And that was really one of the first descriptions of so much cellular diversity being outside of cortex and really kind of scratching the surface probably of what the actual cellular diversity is there.
Across the entire brain, the research teams discovered more than 3,300 different types of neurons, and that account is surely incomplete. The most comprehensive atlas of the mouse brain to date, published in December, identified 5,300 cell types, including both neurons and glia. The project is missing cell census data from some areas, such as the medulla. Still, researchers think that the full count of cell types for the human brain, when it's compiled, will likely be similar. Hongkui Zhen, the director of the Allen Institute for Brain Science, led the mouse brain cell atlas effort. She says they think there are probably not too many more cell types in the human brain compared to the mouse brain. The researchers have already compared brain atlas datasets from the two species. Based on what she's seen, Zhen puts her personal estimate at probably somewhere between 5,000 to 10,000 cell types in the human brain. The mouse brain work does more than enumerate the cell types. It also places those cells in the context of their brain region as a navigable atlas. From that added positional information, the researchers drew fascinating new conclusions. They found that, as in the human brain, the more ancient regions of the mouse brain, such as the hypothalamus and amygdala, contain most of its cellular diversity. However, these various cell types are closely related to one another and have relatively few differences. In contrast, the more evolutionarily novel brain regions, such as the cerebellum and thalamus, contain fewer cell types overall, but their cell types are highly distinct from one another, and each brain region contains cell types unique to it. The authors hypothesize that because the ancient hypothalamus carries out basic functions critical for supporting life, like metabolism, breathing, and reproduction, it's been evolutionarily constrained. It had longer to evolve, resulting in more cell types, but the cells couldn't drift too far from their basic type. Zen points out that the circuits are well established, and every time you make a change, you may jeopardize the animal's life. On the other hand, she says the newer brain regions, like the cortex, carry out functions like cognition and emotion that help animals adapt to new environments and challenges. These less constrained brain regions have been able to evolve faster and further, resulting in the brain cell types distinctive to the regions. The findings from the mouse brain preview the kinds of discoveries scientists are likely to make when the human brain atlas is completed. Already, neuroscientist Thomas Nasilaris at the University of Minnesota, who isn't involved with any atlas efforts, says the work is providing basic facts about brain evolution that no one knew before. Nasilaris says no one has any idea what these new facts imply for the evolution of human cognition, but he thinks they're probably going to turn out to be important. Eventually, researchers plan to use the cellular data of these new brain maps as guides for improving treatment of neurological disorders. Here's Hodge again.
One of the things that is critical about making these atlases is that it provides a baseline, a reference, for understanding how things are changing in the context of disease. If you think of something like Alzheimer's, we know that there's pathology that builds up in the brain. We know there's been some evidence that some cells might be lost, but we don't know a lot of details about what those cells are, how they're changing, what their kind of therapeutic targets we could potentially develop to protect cells in the context of that disease. And if we can study Alzheimer's now using these same sort of technologies and then compare them to this reference population, it gives us a better sense of exactly what is changing in the context of that disease.
It's possible that our understanding of Alzheimer's is held back by an oversimplified map of the brain's composition. The specificity of a cell atlas could make research and medications more precise and impactful. The findings inside the brain cell atlas alone are dizzying. But then consider that other cell atlases are uncovering similar trends. In organ after organ, researchers seem to be finding a greater diversity of cell types than they expected. These discoveries suggest that the healthy functioning of tissues often depends on having the right mix of cells doing slightly different jobs. Each individual cell atlas therefore provides almost incalculable new possibilities for understanding a region of the body and all the things that can go wrong with it. Some researchers have a larger goal in mind. They want to stitch all the maps together to create what Rosarvento Tormo, the group leader of cellular genetics at the Wellcome Sanger Institute, compared to a Google Maps of the human body. Like a biological version of Ortelius's endeavor, the Human Cell Atlas Project is working to draft such a map covering all 36 trillion cells in the human body by linking up reference maps contributed by scientists around the world. Founded in 2016, the project now claims more than 2,300 collaborators and high-profile funders, such as the National Institutes of Health and the European Union, along with many other scientific and private groups. The first version of the Human Cell Atlas is tantalizingly close to its big reveal. Vento Tormo says it could be done within about 2 years. It's unlikely to include profiles of all human cell types. Like the first geographic atlases or the first published human genome, the first human cell atlas will be incomplete at its release, but with plans to revise it repeatedly. Vento Tormo says we're at the very beginning. Future cell atlases will probably also probe cell identity more deeply. Bioengineer and biophysicist Steve Quake says most cell maps are looking only at messenger RNA,
which is not even the only kind of RNA in the cell. There's all kinds of non-coding RNA that matter. And so even in the RNA world, we've only sampled a fraction of what's there.
Plus, an expressed gene doesn't necessarily mean that a specific protein is present in a cell. Research biologist Elizabeth Ray says a future goal is to gather data on which proteins and other molecular products are present in single cells. Even after the first full human cell map is done, the work won't be finished. A central aim of the Human Cell Atlas project is to represent the full range of human diversity, which will require many samples from populations around the world to fully map our cellular diversity. Those samples will need to consider all sorts of diverse factors: sex, age, ancestry, disease state, and more. The daunting work that lies ahead can't quench researchers' exhilaration over the current atlases. Here's Michael Angelo of Stanford.
I think all the atlasing efforts are amazing. I think they're going to be a really big scientific contribution. I really do. It's going to be very exciting to see what comes of all this over the next 2 or 3 years.
Already, the first editions of these atlases are revealing how much we still have to learn about basic biology, while also raising brand new questions. Clear signs of the beginning of a new scientific revolution. Arlene Santana helped with this episode. I'm Susan Vallett. For more on this story, read Yasmin Saplicolu's full article, New Cell Atlases Reveal Untold Variety in the Brain and Beyond, on our website, quantummagazine.org. Quantum Magazine is an editorially independent online publication supported by the Simons Foundation to enhance public understanding of science.